Welcome to Narratives. George Gittos has used his talents in many art forms to draw attention to the plight of those in war zones, both civilian and army. Here he recounts, with a few asides, a series of incidents that typify his experiences in these areas.
I was weeding in the garden, this is the Yellow House, when a bullet whizzed past. It hit Rolf, our rogue monkey, in the hip, and he went cartwheeling to the other side of the garden. From behind the curtains and flywire of our bedroom windows, Helen had taken aim with a Mauser handgun and hit him. A brilliant sniper shot. Helen had not been able to see Rolf. We called him Rolf because, you know, Rolf. He used to screw our little baby monkey. He was a pedophile monkey. So we renamed him Rolf after Rolf Harris. Rolf had not been able to see her take aim, and that enabled her to achieve what no one else had. It was one thing, however, for Helen to shoot Rolf, but something else to finish him off, point blank, and look into his eyes as the trigger was pulled. That task fell to me. As I lifted the gun, Rolf looked up at me with an expression of total derision on his face, as if to say, "Fuck you. Do it now, you piece of shit human." Then he spat at me. I put a bullet in his heart from about 6 feet away, then carried his limp body to the back block to bury. Bodies go heavy when death releases the inner energy of muscle and the living electricity that animates us. Rolf swung from my grip like a bag of wet cement. The ground was hard, and with a lot of effort, I was able to dig him a shallow grave. As I swung the shovel during this miserable chore, my mind went back to Abu Ghraib in Iraq. I've got to tell you, Rolf had killed our rabbits. He'd killed his female partner, and he had to be shot because he tried to kill the newborn baby of our neighbours. He was just a psychopathic monkey. In the days before the American forces entered and secured Baghdad, there was total chaos. I heard that the gates of Abu Ghraib prison had been smashed and many prisoners escaped captivity. This was the biggest sign yet that Saddam was losing his grip on power. I arrived as scavengers were pulling out whatever they could steal. Smoke was coming from buildings and sporadic rifle fire had bullets pinging off the walls, but it was a moment I needed to record. In the main quadrangle, I passed heroic murals of Saddam on horseback, leading the nation to a victorious future. I walked past cells where the corridor walls illustrate an alternative history with prisoners' depictions of Saddam wearing horns in scenes like Hieronymus Bosch's vision of hell. The same painters probably did both. The cell doors hung open, and I felt very alone and vulnerable until the teenage boy beckoned me to follow him. We approached the gallows building. A group of men were comforting a woman, and I asked them why she was in such hysterics. They told me she just found the names of her husband and son on a list of names of those executed earlier that morning. The man said, "Why would Saddam order this? No one believes he's still in Baghdad, and they say the American tanks will be here tomorrow. How could he be so cruel?" I asked to be shown where the gallows were. It was a clinically white industrial kind of room. The gallows were made from welded steel with hinged trap doors and a handle to release them. There was a rancid burning under the structure, filling the air with smoke. I entered alone. Perhaps I was the only person prepared to pass through that door of death. The nooses were still there, thick white fibre with tissue delicately wrapped around the front of the noose. On all of them, the tissue was yellowed, obviously from the throats of the condemned. Later, I asked my assistant, Mohammed, what he thought. He said, "It's part of the executioner's art, to cushion the roughness of the rope when it is placed around the neck. The executioner's art." Small groups of people, seeing I'd managed to enter without being shot or killed by a booby trap, began to enter. They were the relatives. They would examine the lists attached to the entry wall to search for their loved ones' names, then burst into tears when they found them. A man came up to me with one of the nooses and said, "We cannot find their bodies and we need to bury something of them. Do you think we could take the nooses so we have something for the coffin?" I thought of the tissues, yellow with sweat and particles of skin, and said, "Yeah, take them." They knew I was a foreigner, but they needed someone to authorise the taking of the nooses. I interviewed them and photographed them with the nooses and let them go. Perhaps I should have told them I'd guessed where their relatives' bodies were, but I didn't have the heart to. Earlier, I'd seen a pack of dogs tearing at the soil in a flat field in the out area of the jail. I'd walked over to the dogs and a large mastiff sauntered over and dropped a bloody skull at my feet like a dog wanting to play with a ball. Some people saw the direction I'd walked and followed. The bodies were in very shallow mass graves and the dogs had torn flesh and limbs from the top layer of their bodies. There's always someone ready to exploit any situation. One of the scavengers came over with a piece of flat metal and offered to dig for a fee, with the hope of uncovering some loved ones. The only way of identifying them was for him to fish into their pockets for IDs. I began filming this grotesque circus. A camera lens gets more detail than a naked eye. I could focus on the wings of the swarming flies and the tiniest gory detail of dogs pulling away intestines. The scavenger would get very vocal and excited when he discovered an ID tag, calling out the name in the hope a relative was there who would pay for possession of the corpse. I was so absorbed in capturing all of this that I was shocked when the scavenger suddenly began to spew vomit in arching projectile bursts. I couldn't help laughing, and later, when I viewed the tapes, the camera shakes at this moment with my irresistible laughter.
You've been listening to George Gittoes, reading from his book, Blood Mystic. Narratives is produced by Karina Wynne-Moylan of Arts Canvas Bay FM 99.9 and is supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.